breaking down every game, every day in Major League Baseball. This is the Baseball Betting Show. Here is your host, Greg Peterson.
Hey, Borber for Levo. Welcome to Bobby Las Vegas for the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. We've got an excellent podcast for you. We're going to be joined in segment number two by one of our good friends, Curtis Rogers. He does such great work over at 710 Seattle Sports. Take a look at this great game of baseball that we all know and love, and he is the Seattle Mariners pre- and post-game host. So we're going to be taking a look at the American League playoff picture. We're going to be diving in on the outlook of the Seattle Mariners, looking forward to what they're going to be getting on Wednesday and the next few weeks in general, and just how murky things are in baseball right now. In the final segment, going to get you guys picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this Baseball Wednesday as we touch them all. If you do have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you have one of two ways BFR lives in. First one is my Twitter /X timeline at GUnit_81. Keep in mind, Larsium, the name does not matter, so as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. The other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. While I did not get in any Twitter /X questions today, everything is powered by EdgeBoost. EdgeBoost is making sure that bettors are able to have access to their funds whenever and wherever they want. With EdgeBoost, 100% of gambling transactions do get approved, and we go to EdgeBoost.bet. Put in that promo code of Greg, G-R-E-G. That'll get you a dollar-for-dollar match on your first deposit up to $25. Now let's take a look back at everything that we saw in baseball on Tuesday. Try to find some trends and try to get to know these teams a little bit better.
A game from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the Rowdy Recap.
Your best road over team in all baseball is the Seattle Mariners, and they did get another over, but they fall to the Tampa Bay Rays by a count of 6-5. We'll certainly talk with Curtis a little bit more in segment number two about the Mariners, but Brian Wu said boo to giving up a home run to Junior Caminero. His 40th home run season for Wu gives up 3 runs over the course of 5 innings. Caleb Ferguson does not get a single out of the bullpen. He allows 1 run as Edward Bizzardo squirrels out and Gabe Spire from there. Pair of outs out of the bullpen gives up 2 runs. Carlos Vargas in out of the bullpen squirrels and Luke Jackson a squirrel setting. And for Seattle, they did have in this game a trio of home runs off of Drew Rasmussen for Oye Polanco, 23rd home run season. Julio Rodriguez is 27th and Big Dumper Cal Raleigh leg leading 51st, but they were also home runs as Rasmussen gives up those 3 solo home runs in 5 innings. Brian Baker and Garrett Clevenger both on a squirrel setting. Edwin Uceta, pair of outs out of the bullpen, he gives up a run. Kevin Kelly, 4 outs out of the bullpen, squirrel send. Griffin Jacks loaded the bases. Clevenger allowed one of those runs to score, so he did not get a single out, gave up a run, but the Rays get out of that bases loaded situation, and they do get the win. For the Chicago Cubs, they find a way to persevere and get the job done against the Atlanta Braves. This by a count of 4-3, as for the Braves, they did not do a great job with regards to the timeliness of their hits as they leave 4 men on base, 1-2 with men in scoring position. Actually, not too bad there. And you did have a pair of home runs in this one. Eli White, 8th home run season off of Shota Imanaga, and Ozzy, Albies, 14th home run season for Imanaga, gives up 3 runs in 6 innings. From there, Drew Pomeranz, Caleb Theobar, Daniel Palencia, all in a squirrel setting, and Kyle Tucker goes deep off of Joey Wentz, 22nd home run season for Wentz. He does give up that home run, 4 runs in total in 4 innings. Bullpen from there was good. Roderi Munoz, 2 scoreless innings, and then you had a squirrel setting out of both Dylan Dodd and Hayden Harris, with Harris making his MLB debut. So that's an under, and that's a W out there. This was also a W for the LA Angels. How about Mitch Ferris in his MLB debut, picking up a 5-1 win for Ferris, gives up 1 run in 5 innings. Jose Fermin, Reed Detmers, Luis Garcia, Kenley Jansen all on the squirrel setting, and Joel sets fire to the rain. 32nd home run season. That comes off of Michael Lorenzen. Not a bad start here. Allows 2 runs, including that homer, in 6 innings. John Schreiber from there gives up 2 runs in an inning. And Luis Avila, 2 innings out of the bullpen. He allows a run, and not much doing for the Royals as they only muster that 1 run. For the Miami Marlins, they do not get the job done on the road. The Washington Nationals are able to get a 5-2 win, as for the Nationals, it's been a little bit of a slog for them to score at home, but they did a nice job of holding down the Miami Marlins in this one as Adam Mazur. 5 runs, 4 of which were earned on 10 hits in 6 innings. Did a lot of home run to James Wood, who gave you good Wood, 27th home run season. If you like me, I had the over. This game was 5-2 in the bottom of the 4th inning, and then it stays 5-2 as Cade Savali was able to give you a nice start, giving up 2 runs over the course of 5 innings. From there, PJ Poulin, Cole Henry, both landed squirrel setting. Connor Pilkington, Jackson Rutledge combined for a squirrel setting, and Jose Ferrer, a squirrel setting. And for the Marlins, you had 2 squirrel settings out of Freddie Tarnak to be able to get you that under, and being able to get the over was the Red Sox and the Guardians, as this was a very overwhelming game. For Boston, they get an 11-7 win over the Cleveland Guardians, as Slade Cecconi just got absolutely flattened. 7 runs allowed in 5 1/3 innings, including a pair of bombs Going deep for the Boston Red Sox, it was home run number 18 of the campaign for Nathaniel Lowens. Don Rafaela, 16th home run season. Garrett Crochet had a rough start as well. He gave up 7 runs in 6 innings, so he didn't pick up the win because he gave up a quartet of bombs. Austin Edges, who's been awful this year, hitting .147, 4th home run season. Brian Rocchio, 4th home run season. David Fry, his 7th home run of the season. And Jackenzie Noel, his 3rd home run season. But the Red Sox bullpen was much better. As for Cleveland, you got a pair of outside the bullpen squirrels out of Tim Aaron and Nick Enright, but Hunter Gaddis gives up a run in an inning. Cade Smith gave up 4 hits, 3 runs, and did not get a single out as Zach Gett had to get an out of the bullpen for the team and for the Guardians. 1-1 with Ben in scoring position, so a lot of solo and 2-run shots. You had Garrett Woodlock, Justin Slayton, and Brandon Bernardino all in a scoreless inning for the Boston Red Sox. And for the Reds, Nick Lodolo got scratched with an illness, and well, they could have used him in this one. 12-9, the Blue Jays get the job done against the Cincinnati Reds, and for the Blue Jays, they are top over team in all of baseball now. 79 overs, 54 unders, and 6 pushes. Ironically, the Reds are your top under team in all of baseball. 54 overs, 79 unders, and 6 pushes. As for the Blue Jays, Jose Barrios wasn't much better than a bullpen game. 6 runs allowed in 2 innings. He gives up a home run, now only 2 of which were earned. He was hurt by an error out there in the field by the newly acquired Isaiah Kinnear-Falefa, going deep off of Mr. Barrios. Austin Hayes, the Hayes kid, 13th home run season. Then TJ Friedel off of Sir Anthony Dominguez, his 11th home run season for the Blue Jays bullpen. Eric Lauer had to come out of it, gave up 2 runs in 2 1/3 innings. Dylan Tate, a squirrel setting. Louis Varland, 5 outs of the bullpen squirrels. Sir Anthony Dominguez gives up that home run in his inning work. And then Jeff Hoffman, a squirrel setting. And for the Reds, lots of home runs given up as George Springer off of the starter and Scott Barlow. And then Brent Suter, 25th and 26th home runs this season. Suter gives one up to Bo Bichette, 18th home run season. Then Connor Phillips gives one up to Dalton Varsho, 17th home run season for Phillips, gives up this home run in 2 innings of work. Scott Barlow as the opener, gives up 4 runs in an inning. Brent Suter, he got 7 outs and he gave up 6 runs, all of which were earned, including a pair of bombs. You did have Jovan Zuleta give you an out of the bullpen squirrels, and Zachary Maxwell, 1 2/3 innings scoreless, and you also had 1 2/3 innings from Revier San Martin. He was able to give you an unearned run along the way as he was hurt by something out there in the field, but yeah, not great for the Cincinnati Reds, say the least, and not great for the Detroit Tigers. They fall to the New York Metropolitans, this by a count of 12-5. As for the Mets, you had Pete Alonso be able to give you a yard ball in this one. For Alonso, home runs number 32 and 33 of the season as he goes deep off of Sawyer, Gibson, Long, and then off of Chris Paddock as well. As Paddock also gives one up to Juan Soto, 37th home run of the season, and Gibson Long gives one up to Lewis Torrens, 5th home run in the campaign for Sawyer, Gibson, Long. 4 innings, gives up 6 runs, all of which were earned, and then Chris Paddock in long relief, he gives up 4 runs, and he gives up 6 runs, all of which were earned. Not so relieving there. Bailey Horn in 4 outs out of the bullpen, he was able to go scoreless. Tommy Canely not out of the bullpen scoreless, and Brendan Hennepy, Jason Rogers, the backup catcher, both on his scoreless inning, and Tigers lose by 7 runs despite the fact that they go 4-6 with Ben in scoring position as Nolan McLean. He has been really good for the Mets now, 4-0 in his 4 career starts. 2 runs allowed in 6 innings. Kevin Arrigott does give up 3 runs in 2 1/3 innings, and Ryan Sanek, fair outs out of the bullpen scoreless, but damage by then had been done. And for the LA Dodgers, they're doing some damage to trying to win the NL West. They lose the Pittsburgh Pirates by a count of 9-7. Don't look now, but the Pirates getting a little bit on. Clayton Kershaw not on this one. 4 runs allowed over the course of 5 innings. From there, Edgar Enriquez gives up 3 runs in 1/3 of an inning. Blake Trinan, a pair of outs out of the bullpen squirrels. Michael Kopech, fresh off the injury list, gives up a run in 1/3 of an inning. Anthony Band, a pair of outs out of the bullpen squirrels. And Kirby Yates gives up a run in an inning. Despite getting 9 runs, the Pirates still home runs in this one. Andy Paz was able to get a home run, though, off of Bubba Chandler, 24th home run season, and Shohei Ohtani, 46th of the season. Both come off of Chandler, the bulk guy, who gives up 3 runs in 4 innings. Carmen Mladzinski, pretty much an opener, plus gives up 1 run in his 2 innings of work. Isaac Manson gives up 2 runs in an inning. Dory Moretta, a scoreless inning, and Dana Santana, he gives you an inning, but he gives up a run along the way. But by then, damage had been done, and lots of damage done by the Chicago White Sox to the Minnesota Twins. How about a 12-3 win for the Chicago White Sox? As for the Southsiders, Davis Martin gives up 3 runs over the course of 6 innings, more than good enough to get the job done. Brian Hudson gives you a scoreless inning, and Bryce Wilson 2 scoreless innings. And for the White Sox, the home run derby was on. Andrew Benintendi, a pair of bombs, 16th and 17th home runs of the season. Kyle Teal, his 5th home run season. Then you had Lennon Sosa, his team leading 19th home run season, as Thomas Hatch gives up a pair of them. Down the hatch, he gives up 6 runs, 5 of which are earned, while getting 6 out of the bullpen. For Simeon Woods Richardson, not a bad start here. 3 runs, 2 of which were earned, given up in his 5 innings, so It was the unearned run caused by his own throwing error, so he should be credited with that, in my opinion. That's a discussion for another show on another day, but Noah Davitsky gives up 3 runs in an inning, and Brooks Kreske a scoreless inning, but Twins flying in this one. For the Cardinals, their offense has been flat since the All-Star break. Dead last in terms of runs per game since the All-Star break. Yet they're still 71 overs, 61 unders, and 8 pushes for the season. And they did just enough to get the job done against the Athletics. 2-1 the final. As for the A's, Luis Severino was great in this one. 5 scoreless innings. Would have liked a little bit more length, but he did fine. Sean Newcomb, he gives you a pair of scoreless innings. Hogan Harris from there, he gives up an out of the bullpen in 2/3 of an inning. Michael Kelly, he inherited that runner. He gave up a run in a 3rd inning, and he gave up home run to Ivan Herrera. 13th home run season, main form of offense in this one. It's Miles Michaelis, 0 strikeouts, but only 1 run allowed. In 6 innings, Matt Savanson, 2 scoreless innings, and Jojo Romero scores a scoreless inning, as the A's not really able to do much in this one. The Astros not doing much in this one. They fell to the New York Yankees, just by a count of 7-1, as Max Fried getting back online. 3 straight good starts from 1 run allowed in 7 innings. Paul Blackburn from there, 2 scoreless innings out of the bullpen, and Framber Valdez gives up a pair of home runs, 1 to Jazz Chisholm, 27th home run season, and Trey Kershaw, 29th home run of the season, and then Stephen Okert would also give one up to Chisholm, 28th home run of the season for Okert, gives up that home run in his inning work. Anya De Los Santos, 2 scoreless innings, and then you add a scoreless inning out of old AJ Bluba, but for Framber Valdez, this is the 5th time in his last 6 starts that he gave up at least 4 runs, 6 runs allowed over the course of 5 innings, and Astros are looking a little bit shaky out there in the AL West, as the Rangers have been surging recently. Not so much on this night, though, as the Arizona Diamondbacks find a way to persevere, get the job done by a count of 5-3, as for Texas, they have Jacob Latz go relatively good length here, 2 runs allowed in 5 1/3 innings, but Hobie Milner gives it up out of the bullpen, gives up 3 runs in 2/3 of an inning, including a home run. Luis Curvelo and our guy from Ortonville, Wisconsin, Caleb Beausoleil, combined for 2 scoreless innings. And for the Rangers, they went 0-9 with men in scoring position. And for the Arizona Diamondbacks, Ketel Marte of the Marte Parte, 3-run homer in the 7th inning, 25th home run season was the difference, as Nabil Crismet, 2 runs allowed in 6 1/3 innings. Jalen Beeks, pair of outs out of the bullpen, scoreless. And about 2 innings of long relief from the young gun and Taylor Rashi, he gave up 1 run, and that was enough to be able to get that one to the window. And the Giants get to the window, as we saw a fight out there at Coors Field. Always good, clean family fun. Kyle Freeland removed after facing 2 batters because he gives up a home run to Rafael Devers. For Devers, by the way, his 30th home run season. And Giants don't look now, but they're above 500. But for Freeland, he then gets into a fight with Devers as he's rounding the bases. So Devers has to then round the bases as Antonio Senzatella is warming up. Senzatella is actually not bad in long relief. Gives up a solo home run in 4 2/3 innings of work, going deep for the San Francisco Giants off of him. It was home run number 10 of the campaign for Casey Schmidt. And then on Shavili, he would give one up to Wilmer Flores, 15th home run season, and Patrick Bailey, 3rd home run season. That comes off of Jaden Hill. For Hill, he gives up that home run, 2 runs in total in 2 innings. Shavili, he gives up 2 runs in 1 1/3 innings, and Jimmy Erget, 8 scoreless innings, and Hunter Goodman does give you a good man home run, 27th home run season off of Jose Buto. For Buto in long relief, he gives up 2 runs over the course of 2 innings. Logan Webb gives up 7 hits, but only 2 runs over the course of 5 innings. Joey Lucchesi, Ryan Walker, they're both able to supply a scoreless inning, and do I have to have this up by midnight Pacific, 3 o'clock a.m. Eastern. This game just going final as I'm recording this. We are in the 9th inning between the Padres and the Orioles. Only question is, are we going to get the 8.5 over or under, as right now the Orioles up by a count of 6-2 as Tyler Wells makes his first start of the season, and he pitched pretty well for the Baltimore Orioles as he gives up a home run, but just 2 runs in total over the course of 5 innings. From there, Sean Dubin, a scoreless inning. You had Cade Stout and Uncle Rico Garcia throw it over the plate for a scoreless inning, and then you were able to get a scoreless inning as well out of Albert Suarez. Welcome back to him, so we'll see who pitches the 9th inning for the team. But how about what you've been able to get recently out of this young guy, Jeremiah Jackson? He was able to go deep in this one. 4th home run in the campaign, that comes off of Yu Darvish, and Jackson now hitting a .333 for the campaign as Darvish, 4 runs, 3 of which were given up in 4 innings. It's been a miserable run for him. Juani Peralta, an unearned run, give it up in 2/3 of an inning, hurt by a Jake Cronenworth fielding error. And then David Morgan, 4 outs out of the bullpen scoreless. Yuki Matsui, he was able to lend a scoreless inning. And Alec Jacob, he gave up a run in the 8th inning, right now trying to keep this total under in the 9th inning, as Luis Rice was able to provide that home run off of Wells. Home run number 7 of the campaign. And if you're taking a look at trend-wise what we're getting in Major League Baseball right now, overall for the season, we've had more unders than overs, and we are pending that Orioles versus San Diego Padres game, but over the last 7 days, it's been a little bit overwhelming as we've had 48 overs to 42 unders, so 53.3% hit rate to the over with favorites doing a pretty solid job. 53 and 39 on the money line, looks like that'll become 53 and 40, so hitting at a little bit over 57% there overall over the last 30 days. The favorites hitting at about 57.5%, 229 and 168 on the money line, assuming an Orioles win, and the over 8 hitting at about 54.5%, 208 and 174 in that time span. But you look overall for the season, and the under 8 still right around about 50.9%, 1,012 unders, 975 overs, with the favorites on the money line hitting at 57%, 1,172 and 885. So that's where we're seeing in baseball right now, and that's what we all got on Tuesday. Now let's take a look at what we're getting in the American League playoff picture, and with the Seattle Mariners, with Curtis Rogers, who does such great work over at 710 Seattle Sports as the Mariners pre- and post-game host. He joins me next on the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now a part of the VSiN Family Podcast.
Breaking down every game, every day in Major League Baseball, this is the Baseball Betting Show. Here is your host, Greg Peterson.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. It is always great to be joined by this man as we've got Curtis Rogers aboard. He does such an amazing job over at 710 Seattle Sports. Take a look at this great game that we all know and love of baseball as he is pre- and post-game host for the Seattle Mariners. He's doing a great job holding it down there. I know that additionally, he does a great job just really with everything out there in the Pacific Northwest. The Seattle Seahawks are going to be in action in the next few days. I'm sure that he's psyched up about that. You got the Washington Huskies back in action, and he, much like myself, loves some college basketball. You're able to follow him on the old Twitter /X along with Instagram at a kid from Kent all together. And Curtis, always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you.
Greg, always happy to hop on with you. And yeah, everything's going on right now. You keep your head on a swivel, and especially when looking at these baseball playoff races. Every day, the standings are changing in a dramatic way. And here we are about a month away from the start of the postseason, and there's still plenty of playoff positioning to happen over the next 4 weeks. It's a lot of fun right now. Stressful for a lot of these teams that are in the hunt, especially up here in Seattle for sure. But it's one of the best times of the year for sure.
Oh, it certainly is stressful for those of us that are betting on it as well, because I mean, I don't know how you take a look at things, but I don't think I've ever seen just such a wide open race in general as I've seen in the American League, where it just flat out feels like nobody truly wants it, and there's just no dominance out there. Things have been very streaky. The Mariners have looked solid ever since the trade deadline, but they've had their ups and downs as well. They've got a few question marks, and I feel like you could say that about every single team in the American League right now.
You really can, and you can make a case for every team. You can also, you know, come up with big reasons as to why certain teams aren't going to go very far in the playoffs or maybe even miss the playoffs altogether. It's interesting because maybe the hottest team in the American League right now is the Boston Red Sox, who I think everybody kind of wrote them off after the Rafael Devers trade, but they've been playing really well. They're just 2.5 back of the Blue Jays. I don't know if you can necessarily sit here at the start of September and say the Blue Jays are going to run away with things in the AL East. They've kind of come back to earth. The Yankees have struggled, obviously, in the season second half, but they're still right there in the hunt for the American League East. In the West, we all kind of thought the Rangers were going away, but they've been the hottest team in baseball, winning 6 in a row, 9 of their last 10, and they've been doing it without some of their most talented players, Corey Seager, Marcus Semien, Nathan Eovaldi. Here come the Rangers. They're not going away. So it is so insane right now seeing the jockeying for position in the American League. No team is safe. No team is breathing easy right now, except for maybe the Detroit Tigers. They have a 9-game lead up on the Royals in the AL Central. They seem to be kind of in cruise control heading to the playoffs. But other than them, everybody else right now very much looking over their shoulder.
Oh, absolutely. This is a very wide open race in the American League. And just what do you think might be the biggest key in terms of who does come out of the American League, both with regards to making the playoffs and making a run in the playoffs? Because I think that this is a time of year where you look at things that maybe don't show up as much on the box score, on a like spreadsheet or something like that. I look at things like managing, the way that teams have been able to maintain their guys, not get injured. And I think that that's going to be a very big key this year with everything being so equal.
I think so. Bullpen usage and just how that impacts your team starting pitching, going deeper into ball games. I think that's going to be huge, because when you do hand the ball over to a reliever, depending on where you hand it off to him, if your starters are only going five innings, that's a lot to ask out of your bullpen every single night. Four innings of work, basically half a game heading to your bullpen. That's four arms that you're not going to be able to use maybe the next night. Three arms you're not going to be able to use the next night. So these bullpens are getting taxed for sure, and it's the final stretch of the season. So they're going to be asked to do a lot more than they had done in the early portion of the year. We're seeing that here in Seattle, where the starting pitching hasn't been going as deep into games as they've had to do the last couple of years, especially with like Luis Castillo, who hasn't pitched past the fifth inning in about a month now. It's really going to hamper your bullpen and really kind of expose them as well, because your bullpen is probably filled with guys who may not necessarily be lights out, especially guys who get the ball in the fifth, sixth inning. Those aren't going to be your bridge guys. Those are going to be a lot of your middle relievers, guys that kind of come in and mop up duty, and you're kind of exposing them in big, tight situations where it's like, yeah, I need you to keep this lead, even though you don't usually come in when it's a high leverage situation. So that to me is something that I think can dictate a lot of how these playoff races go, is which teams are handling their pitching staffs the best, which teams are getting the most out of their starting pitchers, and which teams are also not exposing their relievers to maybe too much work this time of year. It's easier said than done, especially with how important each out is, how important each inning is. But right now, I would say if you are not treating your starting pitching, if you're not treating your bullpen with a lot of carefulness, I mean, it can get away with you for sure.
Absolutely. As joining me on the show, we do have Curtis Rogers. He is a pre- and post-game host for the Seattle Mariners, joining me right here on the Baseball Betting Show. And when it comes to Wednesday for the Seattle Mariners, it is going to be interesting with George Kirby going up against Adrian Hauser out there in Tampa Bay. That's going to be a, shall we say, early evening start time for those of us out here on the West Coast. And just how do you take a look at both this series and the stretch that the Mariners have for the next week or so? Because they do have this series that they've got right now with the Tampa Bay Rays. Obviously, they want to be winning these games. And then they're going to be facing off against an Atlanta Braves team that is completely knocked out of the playoffs, but they've been giving some good fight recently. They've got the Cardinals, the Angels, the Royals, and then they've got that huge series against the Astros in about 2 weeks, which I feel like that could be exactly what determines the American League West, with, let's call it what it is, the Seattle Mariners having a pretty golden opportunity to be able to rack up some wins prior to that series.
Yeah, I think that's a great point you bring up. You look at just kind of what lies ahead of them before that road trip to Houston. It starts in Kansas City, too. The Royals have been playing better ball to end August, to start September. But the Braves, they're out of it. The Cardinals, they're out of it. The Angels are out of it. Seven of those 10 games are in Seattle, a place where the Mariners have had much more success this year than away from home. So, yeah, there's going to be a tremendous opportunity for this Mariners ball club to stash some wins before heading out for that final road trip. And you mentioned those three games against Houston, September 19th through the 21st. That is going to make or break the American League West. And right now, the Mariners, as of Tuesday, are three back in the division. So you win those three, you move into a tie with Houston, and then it gets down to the tie break of who has a better head-to-head record. Right now, I believe it is Houston that has the better head-to-head record of the two teams, but the Mariners can certainly help themselves out by sweeping or taking that series at the end of September here. But yeah, this Mariners team, you look at the pitching matchup on Wednesday, Kirby against Hauser. The Mariners have faced Adrian Hauser twice already this season, which is interesting because he's not been in their division. He actually made, I believe it was his first start of the year back in May with the White Sox, went six shutout innings against them. And everybody's like, oh man, Adrian Hauser, who got released by the Brewers. People are like, oh man, like, of course.
And the Mets.
Of course he would shut out the Mariners in his first start. This guy's nothing.
The Rangers.
Right. And then turns out Adrian Hauser is actually a really good pitcher this season. He's got a 2.85 ERA, 7-4 on the year. So he's been really good. He did not have as much success against the Mariners back on August 10th, though. Gave up four earned runs in five innings pitched for the Rays in a loss to Seattle. So it's been a mixed bag with Hauser, but obviously it's going to be a pretty good pitching matchup. A lot of good pitching matchups in that series. On Tuesday, we saw Brian Wu against Drew Rasmussen. Kirby has been mostly good in the season second half, had that forgettable start in the Little League Classic on Sunday Night Baseball back on August 17th. But other than that, has looked the part. Mariners have been struggling to score runs for him, though, his last three starts. They only managed four in a loss on August 29th, one in an extra innings loss to the A's back on 23rd, and then that Sunday night game where they only scored three runs. So maybe getting some run support, that would be big for George Kirby. But I would say for the most part, Kirby looks to be nearing his old self, which is great news for the Mariners.
Yep, absolutely. And if he can look like his old self, I think that that would be very impactful for them. And that would be able to give them a nice little bit of a shot in the arm moving forward, as we do have our good friend Curtis Rogers over at 710 Seattle Sports going to be on the Baseball Betting Show. And just how do you take a look at this offense right now for the Seattle Mariners? Because with the Mariners, no doubt about it, it's been sort of an up and down season for them. And with the way that the ballpark is constructed, it happens every year with the Seattle Mariners. They have better when they're away from home rather than at home, because Seattle's about as pitcher friendly as it gets, just with where the ballpark is, pretty close to water, that dies down a lot of the balls, especially in September and October. But I do find it to be a bit of an interesting lineup, and ever since they picked up Eugenio Suarez, he certainly has been able to give them power, but not a lot of on base, and I do fear that this team come the postseason might be a little bit all or nothing.
Yeah, and we've seen that too down the stretch here. You mentioned how they kind of seek out the home run a lot. They do have a ton of home runs, nearing 200 already on the season. And they've got three guys up over 26 home runs, essentially four guys over 26 home runs, because Cal Raleigh has 50 of those. So if you combine what Julio and Randy Arozarena have done, you basically get what Cal has done with the bat this season. Jorge Polanco has added some power as well this season, 22 home runs he's hit. You mentioned Gino Suarez. I believe between his time in Seattle and Arizona, he's got 42 home runs this season. So he is a power threat for sure. But you mentioned the on-base for Gino in the month of August, leaving a lot to be desired, with just .267 on-base percentage, of 200 batting average. That's not going to get it done for the Mariners. That's not the guy who they traded for. Josh Naylor got off to a really hot start with the Mariners. He's cooled off significantly ever since then. He's got the five home runs. He's added a lot of stolen bases, which is funny to see. 12 stolen bases he's had for them, basically doubling his total of what he did in Arizona to start the season. But yeah, this Mariners lineup right now, it does kind of feel like they're hunting the home run. We saw on Sunday Randy Arozarena with a two-run shot to tie the ball game up when they were down 2-0 in the fifth inning. Julio Rodriguez back on Saturday with the late two-run home run to get the game close. It feels like they're hunting for that kind of home run. And speaking of, Cal Raleigh, he hit his 50th home run about a week or so ago. Didn't have a hit until Monday night against the Rays. He went about a full week without recording a base hit. He hit two on Monday against Tampa. So you kind of wonder, is Cal maybe hunting the home run as he's getting closer and closer to history? Obviously, he's got the most home runs by a catcher in a season, you know, hunting, you know, most home runs by a switch hitter, potentially 60, potentially the American League home run record. Like, this is a big month for him in terms of these milestones and maybe putting himself further into that MVP conversation. But yeah, you don't want to be caught chasing home runs, because then you kind of leave yourself exposed in other areas offensively. And I think this team has done a pretty decent job this year getting those sustained rallies going, especially more so this year than years past. But hopefully the Mariners can find a way to continue to generate offense in ways other than home runs, even though it has been working for them for the most part. But you don't want to be caught doing that, because then all of a sudden, if you don't get that home run, your offense is really, really lacking.
Yep, it certainly is. And I think that that's such a great point made by you. And it always makes it very interesting to take a look at these teams, as we do have Curtis Rogers, who does such great work taking a look at this great game, joining me on the Baseball Betting Show. And when it comes to just the overall landscape of baseball right now in the National League side of things, because I know that the Seattle Mariners are going to be facing off against the Braves within the next few days as well. How do you take a look at that side of things? Because one thing that I've been looking at throughout the season is it just does feel like the National League has more of the, shall we say, powerful teams rather than the American League. If you were to power rank like the top five, top six teams, I think perhaps all but one of them would come out of the National League. I think that that is what makes the American League so wide open, because we were just talking about teams like the Royals, the Rangers. If they sneak in, they can make a run. I think that that's so true. But even with the National League having that balance of power, I still think if a team like the Reds, even the Giants, sneaks into the playoffs, they can make some noise too. And I feel like this might be the most open year of baseball I've ever seen.
It really is, because I look at the National League standings right now, you could probably make a case for five or six teams coming out of that side to make the World Series. The Brewers, for sure, you can see potentially making it to the World Series. I know that would delight you to no end, Greg, yeah. But the Phillies, obviously, they've made it to a World Series recently. The Dodgers, the reigning champions, The Padres have always had a ton of talent. I know the Cubs have not played as well in the season second half, and they're kind of waiting for Pete Crow Armstrong to get going, but they still have a lot of talent on that roster as well, and they gave themselves a nice cushion. So I'm looking at the teams currently in the playoff hunt. I mean, outside of the Mets, the Mets have a lot of talent on that roster, but it has just been a nightmare for them here in the season second half. They're holding on for dear life in that National League wildcard race. But I would say of those teams in the NL right now, outside of the Mets, you can make a very strong case that any of them could go to the World Series. I think if I had to handicap it right now, I think the Dodgers, just based off of the level of talent on that roster and how they were able to do it again last year, just continue to perform at a high level the year after that. I think just that experience is so valuable this year. So it's not, you know, a sexy pick to say the Dodgers are going to be the favorites in the National League, but I would say of the teams that are in contention right now, I think they're the ones that I think are easiest to believe in just because of how recently they were able to get it done.
Oh, no question about it. And I do think that with the LA Dodgers, if they're at full health, they are by far the best team in all baseball. The question is, are they going to be at full health when it comes to the postseason? We shall see there. And is there a team that maybe is hovering right around just a little bit above 500? Maybe they are on the cut line for the postseason that you are feeling a little bit bullish about right now. And maybe they can be that team that gets hot, because I just go back to what we've seen over the last few years with the Diamondbacks and the Rangers making the World Series 2 years ago. We have seen a lot in baseball where if you just get out at the right time, you can make that run. And I feel like this could be one of those years. So is there a team or two that you look at that if they do get hot, they can be that team that perhaps makes a little bit of a surprise run?
Well, you mentioned the Giants a little bit there, and they had success against the Cubs. They swept them, and then they took 2 of 3 from the Brewers. They're now at 500, but they're not too far back. They're 5 back of the Mets in the National League wild card. And as we know, the Mets are a team that has historically had many significant collapses in their franchises
just within the last few weeks.
Exactly. So I don't have a whole lot of faith in the Mets being able to pull it off in order to like get to the World Series. Do I think they can go to the playoffs? Absolutely. But there's still, you know, the possibility of them not being able to pull it off. In the American League, the team that I am looking at right now and most concerned with would probably be the Texas Rangers, with how good they have played over the last couple of weeks, when it looked like, especially after that series loss they had to the Mariners where they dropped 3 of 4 to them, and they came into that weekend tied. And then at one point, I believe the Mariners' lead on Texas stretched to like 7 or 8 games. It's now down to 1.5. The Rangers have been playing some incredible baseball over the last couple of weeks, and they've been doing it without some of their most talented players. Their run differential is up near some of the best in the American League right now. That Rangers team, Greg, I mean, they have always shown signs of life this season, but have just never been able to put it together. I look at the pitching staff with Jacob deGrom doing what he's been doing. They've had a bit of luck, a bit better luck with Patrick Corbin this year. Tyler Molly has looked great for them. It's just been kind of a patchwork rotation outside of Jacob deGrom. I know Nathan Eovaldi, how good he has been this year with an ERA under 2. You're not going to get any more of him, though, the rest of the year. But Merrill Kelly, I thought that was a pretty shrewd pickup by them at the trade deadline. He's always been really good with them. I look at the Rangers right now, and they're definitely a threat in the American League. And I think if you're a team that is holding on for dear life, you do not want to see that red, white, and blue and that T logo against your ball club, because they just have been on fire here over the last couple of weeks. And I don't know. I think maybe, just maybe, they're not going to be going away anytime soon.
No, but I don't think that they're going to be going away anytime soon. Just like on this podcast, you never go away, my friend, because we love having you aboard. Curtis, you do such a great job. Take a look at this great game that we all know and love of baseball. I know that you're dialed into everything that we're getting right now, so love the good people at home know what's all on tap for you and how people can follow along on social media and other platforms.
Yeah, a lot of good stuff. We have just a month worth of postseason baseball to look forward to here. It's going to be a lot of fun coming down the stretch. We got the Cal Raleigh show, which airs every Thursdays here on Seattle Sports. You can head to seattlesports.com. You can head to Seattle Sports on YouTube to catch that. We've got conversations with Jeff Passan. We've got conversations with Jordan Schusterman of Yahoo Sports. It's all right there every single week for you. And always, always happy to hop on this podcast with you, talk some ball, but especially this time of year as things are really heating up in baseball. It's so much fun to be able to cover this game, and also so much fun to be able to talk about it with you every now and then.
Typically, this is reserved for horse racing, but I do think that it's very fitting here. Down the stretch, they come in baseball. It is going to be a great final month or so of the regular season and the postseason. Man, I feel like anything can happen. Curtis is going to have a front seat to it all. I'm thinking that the Mariners are going to make the postseason, so hopefully he gets to take a look at some postseason baseball, and every single time he joins me, lends such great insight. So a big thanks to Curtis for joining me on the Baseball Betting Show, now part of the Visa Family Podcast, and coming next, it is that time of the podcast. They give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this Baseball Wednesday as we touch them all.
Breaking down every game, every day in Major League Baseball, this is the Baseball Betting Show. Here is your host, Greg Peterson.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Always great to be joined by Curtis Rogers, who does such great work over at 710 Seattle Sports. Take a look at this great game that we all know and love of baseball. Every single time he joins me, he lends such great insights. Did so once again today. So a big thanks to Curtis for joining me in the last segment. Now it is that time of the podcast. They give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this Baseball Wednesday as we touch them all.
If a game is listed on the betting board, Greg has a side and a total on it, so it is time to touch them all.
Do note that as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter /X feed at GUnit_81, and we are going to be going in Las Vegas tradition order. This is where we go with the National League games first, then the American League games, any interleague games. Those are going to be at the bottom. That'll keep things all nice, neat, clean, and easy. So how about if we do get things started with 901, 902 on the betting board? It is the Miami Marlins on the road against the Washington Nationals as Mitchell Parker goes for the Nats. Yuri Perez is on the bump for Miami. Miami is a favorite of anywhere between -130 to a -137, +112 to a +120 is that number on Washington with a total of 9. The under is -120 and the over is even. Seeing a few straight 8.5s out there, but heavy juice on the over, -125 to the over and +105 to the under, and I'm going to be willing to take a shot on that over, and this is just pretty much a fade of Mitchell Parker at this point, as for our good friend Mitchell Parker, he's been really not getting a lot of swings and misses, 6 strikeouts at 3.4 walks per 9 innings. Honestly, hasn't been the world's worst at giving up the deep ball, but man, right now he's rocking a 5.94 ERA for the season. Fielding dependence more around about a 5.02 because he's not giving up too many home runs, but you just look at this miserable run that he's on right now. He has given up at least 3 runs in every one of his last 6 starts, and if you want to date it back a little bit further, since the beginning of the month of July, that's where things have really just fallen off a cliff for this guy. He has allowed 46 earned runs, 52 in total in his last 49 and 2/3 innings across his last 10 starts. Like, that is just rough right there, and he's given up 11 home runs in that time span, so he's given up 2 home runs per 9 innings in that sort of sample size that I just laid out, the last 10 starts. And for Yuri Perez, he has had his struggles on the road, I will say that. A 4.04 ERA, he's getting about 8.5 strikeouts at 3 walks per 9 innings, 1.1 home runs per 9. That ERA does balloon up to a 5.49 on the road, and all 9 of the home runs that he's given up have been on the road in 39 and third innings. The good news is he faces off against a national team that is actually fourth worst in the big leagues in terms of runs per game at home. They have been far better with their offense when they have been away from home. C.J. Abrams is a big reason why, because with C.J. Abrams, he's got 17 home runs this year, hitting in that neighborhood about a 265 to 270. All but 3 of those home runs have come on the road, though. You've got James Wood giving you good wood, 25-plus home runs. He's been able to supply you with an on-base percentage of a 355, but has really slowed down ever since the All-Star break. You do have Jalen Lyles stepped up as a young guy hitting at 270. Not a lot of power, but I mean, he's been able to move the line, and that's more than what you could say for some of these guys like a Robert Hassel, Dylan Cruz, Riley Adams. A lot of guys are hitting below at 225 for this unit, and Josh Bell has been better lately since beginning of the month of July, hitting above a 260. He's been able to give the team 17-plus home runs. And for Miami, they're actually a top-5 team in terms of run production away from home, with about 4.9 runs per game away from home. Now, they are still dealing with the Kyle Sowers injury, but Augustin Ramirez has been a good form of power for them. 19 home runs, albeit just a 287 on base, but Liam Hicks moves the line with a 353 on base. Jacob Marcy has been tremendous for this team, hitting well above 300. Xavier Edwards has been a little bit cold over the last 2 weeks, but so for the season, a 340 on base. You've got the likes of a Connor Norby, Otto Lopez, and in the neighborhood of a 245, and Roberto Hernandez, he's been able to give you some good production as well with about a 330 on base for the Miami Marlins. Since beginning of the month of June, it's been a league average bullpen in terms of ERA. It's been up and down. Kate Gibson, Tyler Phillips, Lake Bacar, Ronnie Enriquez. You've got a lot of guys. They're posting up an ERA of a 3.5 or better, and for the Washington Nationals, well, this bullpen is dead last in the big leagues in terms of ERA. They've looked a little bit better recently, but that's because it really couldn't get a whole heck of a lot worse than what it was. And P.J. Poulin has, in a small sample size, actually given you a 1.84 ERA, albeit 14 and two-thirds innings, but you'll take it where you can get it. Connor, he's right around about a 4 ERA along with Jose Ferrer, and then likes of Jackson Rutledge, Shinkuzi Ogasawara, Orlando Ribalta, Eduardo Salazar, Mason Thompson. Man, these guys are not great to say the least, and I do think that for the Miami Marlins, they are going to be able to get to the Nationals and get the job done here. Did sell my total at 9.1, so I am going to be in on this total over, and with the Marlins, I'm willing to lay up to a minus 146 with regards to that money line. 903, 904 on the card. It is the LA Dodgers, and they're going to be on the road against the Pittsburgh Pirates as Braxton Ashcraft hopes to not be a load of Ashcraft for the Pirates, and Shohei Ohtani goes for the Dodgers. Dodgers are a sizable favorite between minus 166 to a minus 182. Between plus 149 to a plus 155 is that number on Pittsburgh, with 8 to 8.5 being the total. On the 8.5, under is minus 120, the over is even. On the 8, over is between minus 110 to a minus 115. Under is between minus 105 to a minus 110. And for the Dodgers, I set their money line price at a minus 169. If you're looking to lay a run half with them, right now we're utilizing the old initial FanDuel opener, which these can be highly unreliable from time to time. But that said, right now I'm seeing that at a minus 105, and I'd be willing to lay that. I'd be willing to go up to a minus 107 with this run line. So right at that cut line for Shohei Ohtani, he's now going deeper into games. In his last 30, he was able to go a full five innings, a lot one run, and I mean, overall for the season, Shohei Ohtani has been a solid pitcher. Has he been amazing? No, and that's mainly because he's been going a lot of 3 to 4 innings in a lot of these starts, but you take a look at what he's been able to do recently. 2 runs for fear allowed in 3 of his last 5. Had that rough go of it on the road against the Angels and the Colorado Rockies, but going to elevation, and the Angels are just a pesky team in general. I'm willing to forgive that a little bit, and overall for the season with Shohei Ohtani, 12.2 strikeouts, 1.9 walks per 9 innings, 418 ERA, but a 226 fielding independent, so he should be doing for its positivity. And Braxton Ashcraft has been really good for this Pittsburgh Pirates team as well. For Ashcraft, he began the season out of the bullpen. He has made, I believe now, 4 actual starts. He had an open as well, but I mean, in the 4 actual starts, he's given up a combined 3 earned runs over the course of now 19 innings. He, for the season, 8.3 strikeouts to 2.6 walks per 9 innings, has a 2.58 ERA. I mean, these are very encouraging signs for the Pirates, who are starting to get some good pitching. The bullpen does have a little bit of a hamperance now because Ashcraft is out of it, but I do have Dennis Santana along with Isaac Madsen, who have been able to give you a sub-3 ERA. They've been utilizing a lot of, like, piggybacks. You saw that yesterday with Bubba Chandler, so there's a lot of mixing and matching going on with the Pirates, and they do have a few less than trustworthy guys. The big thing is the offense for the Pittsburgh Pirates, so they are currently dead last in the big leagues in terms of runs per game, albeit it's been a little bit better recently, but still have the likes of Henry Davis, Jared Trollo, Alexander Canario, Donyo Cruz hitting a 225 or lower. Cruz has been able to give you 18-plus home runs, but he was out of the lineup. Yes, he, Brian Reynolds, and Andrew McCutchen, the lone 3 guys on the roster with more than 8 home runs this season. Though Tommy Pham has picked it up. He and Nick Gonzalez sitting above a 265. And then for the LA Dodgers, this is still a top 5 offense in terms of run production, but they just have not been the same without Max Muncy. So Will Smith giving you 400 on base. Ohtani, 43-plus home runs, 385 on base. Mookie Betts has had a down season, but Freddie Freeman continues at darn near 300 with 18-plus home runs. Asker Hernandez, 20-plus home runs. Andy Paz, right around about 24, 25 home runs, hitting at 275. So top to bottom, it's a solid lineup. The bullpen is starting to get healthier as well. Blake Treinen, Tanner Scott, Kirby Yates, all coming off the injury list in the last few weeks is solid. And now it looks like they're getting Michael Kopech back as well. So now you're starting to get these pieces back in the fold, because I mean, Jack Dreyer was your best bullpen piece prior to this, a sub-3 ERA, because Alex Vesia also at the injury list. Ben Kasparis has not been great. Anthony Banda has been up down all around this far this season. So that's going to be all about the Dodgers. I did say I told it at 8.3. I do think that for the Dodgers, are going to be able to erupt a little bit more with their offense, so I do like the over, and with the Dodgers willing to go up to a minus 105 on that run line. 9-5, 9-6 on the card. The Atlanta Braves are on the road against the Chicago Cubs. As for the Cubs, it's Cade Horton, here's a who, going for them, and Bryce Elder hopes to not look elderly for the Atlanta Braves. And for the Braves, they are pretty good-sized underdogs. You're going to be finding them between plus 128 to a plus 136, minus 150 to minus 155 is that number on the Cubs, with a total of 8.5. The over is minus 120, and the under is even, and unless of my eyes deceive me, looks like we're going to have wind blowing in towards the nighttime, because the wind is going to be blowing out very early on in the AM in Wrigley. So if this were a day game, I would actually be looking at the over, but this is going to be a game that starts right around about 6:40, and by that time you have heavy winds out there and it looks like it's going to be blowing in. So unless if I see something that changes, I'm going to be in on the under, as I set my total for the wind at a 7.3. again, we're subject to a little bit of change here, but I don't think it's going to be changing too much to where I'm going to be taking an 8.5 over, especially with the run that Cade Horton is on. Cade Horton has been absolutely magnificent for this Cubs team. How about allowing 4 runs across 41 and a third innings in his last 8 starts? He has been just flat out remarkable. Now, Horton is not getting a ton of strikeouts, only about 7.5 or so strikeouts per 9 innings, but he's doing a really good job of not beating himself. He has been giving up only 0.8 home runs and 2.8 walks per 9 innings. And for Bryce Elder, last 2 starts are actually quite a bit better for him. 3 runs allowed across 13 innings against the Mets and the Phillies, but still a disastrous season. 5.85 ERA, 1.4 home runs, 3.4 walks allowed per 9 innings. He had that 1 start where he gave up like 10 runs that just absolutely ballooned his ERA. But I mean, it goes well beyond that, because for Bryce Elder, I believe that in his last now 12 starts, he's given up at least 4 runs in 7 of them. So I mean, it has been not great times for him, to say the least. The bullpen is looking a little bit better for the Atlanta Braves, as you do have Aaron Bummer on the injury list. That's actually probably a good thing for this team. Dylan Lee, Raisio Iglesias have been up, down, all around guys, but for Iglesias, he's starting to be able to get his act together way too little, way too late. But both of these guys below a 3.85 with regards to ERA since coming to Atlanta. Tyler Kinley actually has a sub 2 ERA. Dylan Dodd, Pierce Johnson have been fine, and for Matt Olson along with Marcell Ozuna, they've been your main forms of offense. Both of these guys 20 plus home runs and about a 360 on base. So Marcell Ozuna's batting average more in that neighborhood, about a 230. Ron Acuña Jr. continues to give you above a 400 on base. He's supplied the team with 15 plus home runs, so love to be able to see that. And Ozzy Albies not hitting for a lot of on base, but 13 home runs. And Michael Harris hitting for a 252 with 17 home runs. He needs to draw more walks, still like a 280 on base. But overall, this is a team that's starting to get their act together, though still off-putting that you have Nick Allen with 0 home runs this season at the shortstop spot. And for the Cubs, this team has been in the bottom 5 of the big leagues in terms of run production ever since the All-Star break. But you still have a top-to-bottom lineup that moves the line, gets on base. Zeke Horner hitting a 290. Kyle Tucker has been able to give you 21 home runs along Dansby Swanson. And for Tucker, above a 370 on base. Swanson sitting at 250. Carson Kelly has been able to give you above a 340 on base. And even in this rough run, they've been able to get guys on. They just have not hit with men in scoring position. Say Suzuki, Pico Armstrong, 27 to 28 home runs apiece. So Suzuki has had a little bit of a rough go of it recently, and Pico Armstrong got a little bit of a day off yesterday. They've been looking to some of their young gun guys to be able to help out in that outfield. And for the Cubs, this has still been a pretty sturdy and a pretty rock solid bullpen, as you've got a lot of guys that are posting up a sub 250 ERA. Caleb Theobar, Drew Pomerantz, Daniel Palencia, Brad Keller, all part of that. Taylor Rogers had a little bit of a miserable run of it over the weekend, but I mean, he's still been relatively solid for the season, and I do think that for the Cubs, they absolutely do take it to Bryce Elder. So my money line price at a minus 195. I was willing to take a plus 103 or better on the run line. We don't have a lot of openers out with regards to our run line, but I can imagine that it's going to be greater than a plus 103, and the reason why the run lines are off the board is because most places don't have a total. But that said, I'm going to be in on that run line, and I'm going to be taking the 8.5 as long as it was Saints to the under. 907-908 on the card. The Phillies are on the road against the Milwaukee Brewers. Jose Quintana's on the bump for the Brew Crew, and Aaron Nola hopes to be super for the Phillies. Phillies are between even money to plus 112 underdogs, and between minus 115 to a minus 125 is that number on the Brewers. 8.5 to 9 is on the 9. Under is minus 120. The over is even on the 8.5. Over is minus 120, and the under is even. And did semi tall it at 8.8, but I would much rather have an 8.5 over rather than a 9 under, because both of these guys have just not been trustworthy. They're both aging guys, in my opinion. And for Aaron Nola, man, since he's come off the injury list, he has given up 13 runs, 12 of which have been earned in 14 and a third innings. He's still for the season getting over 9 strikeouts per 9 innings, but that overall ERA is a 6.37 with 30 or 2 home runs allowed per 9 innings, so he has been rough to say the least. And 2 of those 3 starts came against the Nationals, so that's not great. And for Jose Quintana, 3.69 ERA, but a 4.86 fielding independent. He's only getting 6 strikeouts per 9 innings, allowing 1.3 home runs, 3.4 walks per 9 innings. Gave up a 6 spot in his last start against the Arizona Diamondbacks, so you do have to have your fear there. But for the Milwaukee Brewers, this is by far your top offense in terms of run production ever since the All-Star break. Since the All-Star break, they're actually leading the league with like 15 more runs than the next closest team in terms of just overall run production. It's been absolutely insane what we've seen here. And for the Milwaukee Brewers, it's just all about moving the line. They now have Jack Jackson Trujillo back, which means that they've got two guys in the lineup with 16 plus home runs, as Trujillo doesn't necessarily give you a lot of on base, but he's been able to do a good job of being able to provide the pop all season long with 18 plus home runs. And then you've got Christian Yelich, 27 bombs, but he's full of just a cavalcade of different guys. They're giving you at least a 350 on base. He, William Contreras, if you look at a Brewers uniform and a Brewers uniform only, so excluding the White Sox data, Andrew Vaughn, Sal Frelick, Bryce Terang, Isaac Collins. So these guys have been rock solid there. Caleb Durbin is starting to step up. He's been able to give you 330 on base, and it's really had a nice run of things over the last few weeks. And for the Brewers, since the beginning of the month of June, a top 8 team in terms of bullpen ERA. Now, Trevor McGill being out has really hurt this bullpen. They have taken a little bit of drop off since then, but you've got the likes of Aaron Ashby, Ebner Uribe, when he's been out there, Grant Anderson, as he's been a little bit up and down. DL Hall, the long guy, give you all a 340 ERA or better. Nick Mears has fallen on some tough times, but for the Philadelphia Phillies, even with Yoan Duran being picked up, the team is still in the bottom half of the big leagues in terms of bullpen ERA for the season, but Jose Alvarado coming back should be able to help out with that. He, Tanner Banks, David Robertson, or Ryan Kirkering have all been able to give you a sub 345 ERA. And for the Philadelphia Phillies, this is still a rock solid offense, is in the top 8 in the big leagues in terms of run production, but it does take quite a bit of a drop off when they're away from home. For the Phillies, 5.35 runs per game at home, that is number 2 in all baseball. 4.23 runs per game away from home, that's in the bottom half of baseball. So something that you do want to take note of. Now, Kyle Schwarber, whether you be at a home or on the road, he's been amazing. 49 home runs, had that 4 home run game about a week or so ago, 366 on base, you know what you're getting there. Only one other player is above 16 home runs, so that's Bryce Harper. He's been eating up 360 on base, 23 home runs. And then you do have Max Kepler, Trey Turner, and Nick Castellanos all between 14 and 16 home runs. But in the case of Kepler and Castellanos, a sub 300 on base, Turner's hitting at 336 on bases. He's been great. And then Amando Sosa's able to move line. JT Realmuto is as well. You've had Alec Bohm hitting for about a 275. So these guys have been rock solid. But do think that in the end, Brewers have a nice edge, and I just don't trust an Aaron Nola. I do want to be able to get an 8.5 because I would rather have that 8.5 over rather than a 9 under. So seeking that out to go with the Brewers money line, I set the Brewers at a minus 134. 909, 910 on the card. It is the Giants, and they're on the road against the Colorado Rockies as Edermán Márquez is on the bump for the Rockies and Mr. Robbie Ray. It's a hit by parade to another start. Total on this game is between 10.5 and 11. On the 11, the under is minus 115, over is minus 105. With the 10.5 over is minus 125, the under is plus 105. The Giants are between minus 212 to minus 227 favorites, plus 183 to a plus 194 is that number on Colorado. And I am going to be willing to lay the Giants run line. I was willing to go up to a minus 146 on this run line. The initial FanDuel opener is beep-doo-doo-beep, minus 130. So we are going to be in there. And I did the beep-doo-doo-beep because I had to look up the actual FanDuel opener. So hopefully you enjoyed the comedy there. But that said, with regards to Robbie Ray, he has been a pretty steady pitcher. Hasn't been quite the same on the road rather than at home, and we have seen a drop off in his swing and miss stuff this year, down to about 8.9 strikeouts for 9 innings. That's on pace to be like his second worst mark since 2016, but still, he's giving up only one home run per 9 innings, 318 ERA, closer to 387 field independent, but has been pretty sturdy this year. I will say 3 plus runs allowed in each out of his last 4 starts, so quite a few of those were unearned runs, especially that start against the San Diego Padres. But I do think that he's going to be able to get back on the straight path, and he's going to be rock solid here. And even though he's got some home and road splits, it's not like he's been atrocious on the road. 302 road ERA has actually been better with regards to ERA on the road, but the home runs per 9 rate is about 1.2 away from home. At home, it's closer to a 0.9. And then with Edermán Márquez, he's been giving up a lot of contact this year, is the best way of putting it. Came off the injury list against the Chicago Cubs and gave up an 8 spot in 4 and a third innings. Not savory to say the least. He is right now giving up 11.8 hits per 9 innings. 6.4 strikeouts, a 3.3 walks per 9 innings. The field independent of 46 indicates that he should be in for a little bit of positivity, but he goes up against a Giants unit that they hit much better away from home rather than at home. Their numbers get dwarfed because of how pitcher-friendly their ballpark is. Less than 4 runs per game at home for the Giants, entering into Tuesday, 4.55 runs per game away from home, and all of a sudden Rafael Devers is giving you something a little bit too little too late for this season. But hey, Rafael Devers is finally producing for the team. Yay, verily there. As overall for the campaign for our good friend Mr. Devers, he's been able to give you about a 360 on base. He's out to 14 home runs in 66 games. This is what the Giants were looking for a little bit more, and going into the game on Tuesday, he had belted out a home run in back-to-back games. So you do like to be able to see that. You've got Matt Chapman, who's not really aiming for average at 229, but 18 home runs, 340 on base. Eloy Ramos, 16 bombs, 340 on base. So you've got guys that are starting to produce for the team. Willie Adames says, man, we give you 26 home runs. The batting average has been atrocious, but He's been a little bit better there. And then some of the young guys, they just have not been too trustworthy. The catcher spot has been a bit of an issue, though. I mean, whenever you get Tom Smith out there, he's been able to hit a .280. And for the Colorado Rockies, obviously, this is a better lineup when they're at home rather than away from home. But bottom four team in the big leagues in terms of their overall run production. You've got Hunter Goodman, who's been able to give you 26 bombs, hitting for a .320 on base. He's one of the rare exceptions, though. He's actually hit more home runs when he's been away from home rather than when he has been at home. But Jordan Beck at home hitting a .315. Mickey Moniak, Brenton Doyle, both hitting above a .300, both have been able to give you 10 plus home runs as well. Kyle Farmer just can't hit anywhere at .259 on base at home. Orlando Arcia, give you a .272 on base with one home run at Coors Field. So that's an issue. And for the Colorado Rockies, second worst team in the big leagues in terms of bullpen ERA. You've had Victor Vodnik along Jimmy Hergett be able to supply a .340 ERA, but I mean, the rest of this bullpen is just all sorts of awful. Like, so Nick Anderson, Ryan Rolison, the currently injured Zach Ognos, Anel Shavili, you go down the list of over a 5 ERA, and it's not great. And for the San Francisco Giants, still a top three team in terms of bullpen ERA for the season, though that is without Camilo Duval and Tyler Rogers now. These were two guys that were very good for them towards the beginning part of the season, but Jose Buto is a nice long guy. He's been able to give you a .250 ERA in a Giants uniform. You got Randy Rodriguez posting up a .2 ERA. He's been rock solid. You've got Joey Lucchesi being able to give you some long relief as well, so do think that the Giants should be able to take to the Rockies. I'm willing to go up to -146 on the run line, and it's a by total 11.8, so I'm in on the over. 9-11, 9-12 on the guard. It is the Guardians, and they are on the road against the Boston Red Sox. Joey Cantillo is on the bump for the Guardians, and Kyle Harrison is going for the Rockies. Most places have this game off the board because we did not know whether or not we were going to be getting Cantillo in this game. With the lone opener I'm seeing being the Red Sox at a -146 plus +124 on Cleveland, and a total of 9. The over is even, under is -120, and I did semi-total at an 8.9, so at a 9 or greater, I will be in on the under. For Kyle Harrison, he was one of the biggest pieces, actually, of the Rafael Devers trade, and he has spent a lot of time at the minor league level. I know that over the last year or so, he's dealt with a few injuries as well, so a few different things going on here. And for Kyle Harrison, looking at how he was able to do in the Boston Red Sox organization, 11 starts at the AAA level. The command issues are still there, 4.5 walks per 9 innings, but really wasn't giving up the deep ball. 0.9 home runs per 9 innings, 9 strikeouts per 9. The fastball velocity is still very solid with him. He's a nice upside guy who's right around about 24 years old, and I enjoy Cantillo is pretty much Rick the Wild Thing Vaughn 2.0. Very fitting that they have him on the Cleveland organization. So there's that aspect of things for Cantillo at 3.93 ERA overall for the season, 10.9 strikeouts, 4.9 walks per 9 innings, and he has spent some time at the minor league level this year as well. He spent some time as a starter. He spent a little bit of time out of the bullpen as well, so he has very much been up, down, all around thus far this season. And for Cantillo, he is backed up by a rock solid bullpen, but really both of these guys are backed up by really good bullpens. Under the radar, the Boston Red Sox have been amazing with Aroldis Chapman perhaps being the best closer in all of baseball. Red Sox are number 3 in the big leagues in terms of bullpen ERA. Chapman is providing a 1 ERA, and then you've got the likes of a Justin Wilson, Garrett Whitlock, Brendan Bernardino. These guys give you a .335 ERA. And for the Cleveland Guardians, they're up to number 5 in terms of their bullpen ERA. Even with Emmanuel Clase out, you've had so many guys like Kate Smith. I know that Hunter Gaddis has been a little bit up and down this year, but him, Eric Zabrowski, Jacob Junis, all being able to supply a .345 ERA. The big problem that you've got for Cleveland is that this is just such a top-heavy lineup. And you've got so many guys out there like Nolan Jones, Bo Naylor, David Fry, Jonquezi Noel, the backup catcher, and Austin Hedges, only get .220 or lower. And Anel Martinez is hitting like a .225 with a .260 on base. Stephen Kwan has been solid at the top with a .275. Jose Ramirez, he's able to belt out 25 plus bombs, .355 on base. And Kyle Manzardo, not necessarily a great average guy, but he's up well over 12 home runs this season. But I mean, outside of that, you're not getting a lot of production there. Guardians are a bottom 8 team in terms of runs per game. And for the Red Sox, this has been a top 7 offense in terms of run production, even though you don't have a lot of power out of this team, as Trevor Story and Wilder Abreu are leading the way with 22 home runs apiece, and Abreu is still on the injured list. Trevor Story is full of just a big giant list of guys, hitting about .245 to .260, though, as you've got Jaron Duran, Zidane Rafaela, Carlos Narvaez, all sort of in that fold. You need Masataka Yoshida to pick it up. He has not been himself since coming off the injured list, but they pick up Nathaniel Lowe. He's already picked up a few home runs with the Boston Red Sox, and Roman Anthony doesn't hit for a lot of power, but about a .400 on base, was lifted from the game yesterday, so you do want to take note of that. But I do think that for the Red Sox, they get a relatively good start here out of Harrison. Recognize that it's a little bit more hitterish out there in Boston. But with the way that the Guardians are hitting, I'm going to be willing to take a shot on the Red Sox on a chalkier money line. Set mine at a minus 153. And like the under, set my total at an 8.9. 913, 914 on the card. The Mariners are on the road against the Rays as Adrian Don't Come Doogie Howser is on the bump for the Rays. And Mr. George Kirby is on the bump for Seattle. Seattle is a pretty good size favorite, minus 130 to minus 137 there. Between plus 112 to a plus 120 is that number on Tampa Bay. 8.5 is the total. Under is minus 115. The over is minus 105. I did set my total at 9.1. I'm going to be in on the over for George Kirby. He just has not been the same when he's been away from home rather than when he's been at home. For Kirby, he's got a fielding independent that's lower than his ERA. 3.94 ERA, 3.55 fielding independent. He's giving up 2.3 walks and 1.1 home runs per 9 innings, so he's been pretty sturdy there. But on the road, this goes to 1.4 home runs per 9 innings with a 4.73 ERA. 3.14 home ERA with 0.7 home runs allowed per 9 innings, so a pretty good divide there for Adrian Houser. Just has not been the same since he left Chicago. In Chicago, he's posted up a 2.10 ERA, 0.4 home runs per 9 innings. Now, he was giving up a lot of contact that he got away with as he was able to keep the ball in the yard there. Hasn't done so as much in Tampa Bay, 4.81 ERA with more like one home run allowed per 9 innings. But we were talking about with Curtis Rogers, this is a little bit of an all or nothing Mariners lineup, and Eugenio Suarez has been able to give you 42 plus home runs, but in a Mariners uniform, hitting below the Badoza line of 200, Cal Raleigh, big dumper, has been able to give you a 350 on base, but I mean, he draws a lot of walks, he hits a lot of homers, and doesn't really do the little things for this team, so that's a bit of an issue, though he does have 50 home runs, so that's a nice deodorant to that. Randy Arozarena has been able to give you about a 340 on base. You've got Josh Naylor giving you about a 345 on base. J.P. Crawford moves the line, Dom Canzone sitting about a 280, and Ore Polanco has been able to give you 22 plus home runs as well. But on the Rays side of things, you've got Brandon Lau getting loud. When he was out of the lineup, this Rays team was really suffering with regards to their production. He's back. He's been able to give you 28 bombs, hitting for about a 265. Yandy Diaz is up to 22 home runs with a 350 on base. Junior Caminero doesn't draw walks, but he does give you 39 home runs. And then Chandler Simpson, he doesn't give you any sort of power, but I mean, it's for a 290, and he's given the team over 38 stolen bases. They're taking a little bit of a roll of the dice on Richie Palacios, who's a little bit of a young upside guy, and I do think that even though the shortstop spot and the catcher spot have really been dead bats for the Rays, that they are going to be able to get to Mr. George Kirby. And for the Tampa Bay Rays, it's been a very intriguing bullpen because I like Pete Fairbanks, Garrett Clevenger, both of these guys, a sub-275 ERA. But why they've got Eric Orze down at the minor league level, I have no idea. For guys like Brian Baker, Griffin Jacks, who are getting Jacks up, giving you over a 4 ERA. Edwin Uceta has been a little bit of a roll of the dice. And for the Seattle Mariners, the top guys in this bullpen have actually been really good. Even though Andres Munoz does have the 7 blown saves, he, Matt Brash, Gabe Spire, Andre and Eduardo Bartisardo have all been able to give you a sub-310 ERA. Caleb Ferguson has been a little bit up and down this year. He struggled with the Seattle Mariners, but I do think that in this spot, the Rays are able to get to George Kirby, and I do think that this is going to be a higher scoring game out there in a place in Tampa where the ball has been flying quite a bit recently. Semi-total 9.1, like the over, and for the Rays, plus 115 or better, I'm in on that money line. 915, 916 on the card. It is the Angels, and they're on the road against the Kansas City Royals. Ryan Burgert will get the start for the Royals. Right now, it's to be determined for the Angels, so most places have this game off the board, and that's because we don't know if we're going to get a start out of Jose Ureña or if we're just going to get a bulk appearance. Right now, the initial FanDuel opener is the Royals at a minus 158, plus 134 on the Angels with a total of 9. Over is minus 105, and the under is minus 115, and I'd be willing to take a shot on the Royals on the run line. Their run line price is listed at a plus 128. I was willing to take a plus 120 or higher, and for Jose Ureña, this is going to be team number 5 of the season for him. Like, my goodness! I always make the joke when whenever you get a guy that gets traded, he's being passed around like a basket of breadsticks at Olive Garden, and man, I mean, this is like a family-sized order at Olive Garden. Like, you get some Jose Ureña, you get some Jose Ureña. Like, man, 5 different teams, and he's only got 1 loss this far this season. Like, how he's pitched for 5 different teams and he's only got 1 recorded loss is actually like a Guinness Book of World Records right there. But he's not been very effective, to say the least. That's why he's going to be with team number 5 here. He's got a 5 ERA, 5.44 fielding independent, 5 strikeouts per 9 innings, 3.3 walks, 1.5 home runs per 9 innings. There's a reason why he's not latching on with any of these teams. And for Ryan Burgert, he's a guy that I really like. The walks do need to come down with him a little bit, but this has been a very serviceable guy, both with the Padres and with the Kansas City Royals, as right now he's got a 2.54 ERA. That's going to see some regression. 4.05 fielding dependent. Again, the walks per nine rate, a little bit high. 3.7 walks per nine innings. He's giving up about 1.1 home runs per nine innings, and the 2.54 is with the Royals. Overall, it's a 2.67, but still very effective, as you can tell, and he has given up 200 runs or fewer in each out of his last five starts. He gets to go up against an Angels team that is very all or nothing, with the Angels are in the top five of the big leagues in terms of home runs that are per at bat basis, and they're in the bottom six in terms of on base percentage, as you've got Joe Adell setting fire to the rain with 30 home runs, but a 2.98 on base. You've had really good production out of Taylor Ward, who has been giving you over 30 home runs. He's giving you more like 3.15 on base, but he was out of the lineup yesterday, and these guys at the bottom of the fold are just not giving you too much, like Bryce Tesuto, Oswaldo Peraza, Chris Taylor. They've had to trot out there some bad guys at the bottom of the lineup, so it's becoming top heavy. Mike Trout was out of the lineup yesterday as well, so this Angels lineup is really dealing with issues. So they do have still Zach Neto out there, 25 home runs. He's been steady in terms of getting on base, and then for the Royals, post All-Star break, this has actually been a respectable lineup. Now, Nick Lofton, John Rave, who I believe that Rave is still out the minor league level. They sent him down a few weeks ago. These two guys hitting a 200 have not been great. Randall Grichuk hasn't given you too much. And they removed Mike Yastrzemski from the leadoff spot. That's unfortunate. Four home runs in his first 25 games at the leadoff spot for the Royals, but he's been highly productive. Vinny Pascantino has been supplying 28 home runs. Salvador Perez is up to 20-plus bombs. He's been much more effective here recently. Bobby Witt Jr., he's out getting on a power tear. He's up to 20 home runs, over 30 stolen bases, 350 on base. And Mikel Garcia, under the radar, he's been able to hit darn near 300. He's up to 15 plus home runs as well. And the Royals do have a royally good bullpen. Though I will say, for the Angels, since the beginning of the month of June, about a league average bullpen in terms of ERA. Kenley Jansen, Brock and Roll Burke have been solid, but Hunter Strickland is out on the injured list. Ryan Zephyrian, Kenley Jansen, Jose Fermin. You've got a lot of guys in that bullpen that you just don't trust in. And then for the Royals, Lucas Arcega, Carlos Acevedo, sub-3 ERAs. John Schreiber, Daniel Lynch have been solid as well. Schreiber more like a 3.25 ERA. Taylor Clark has been able to give you some nice innings as well, so I've been loving what I've been seeing there. And for the LA Angels, I do think that Jose Ureña in some form or capacity is going to give up runs, so at a 9, I'm in on the over. And for the Royals, plus 120 or higher, willing to lay that run line. 9.17, 9.18 on the card. It's the White Sox on the road against the Minnesota Twins. Zebby Matthews is on the bump for the Twinkies, and you've got Yandrys Gómez on the bump for the White Sox. White Sox are an underdog between plus 140 to a plus 149, minus 160 to minus 172. That number on Minnesota, 8.5 is the total, over is minus 120, and the under is even. And for the Twins, I set their money line price at a minus 164. If you're willing to lay a run F right now, that's right around about plus 120, plus 125. At a plus 120 or better, I'm going to be in on it. For Zebby Matthews, he has pitched better than what the ERA would indicate. He has been a really good swing and miss guy, as right now he's getting in the neighborhood about 10 strikeouts per 9 innings. So 1.4 home runs per 9 innings, bit concerning, but still, 3.66 fielding independent compared to a 5.06 ERA, and he's given up 300 runs or fewer in 4 out of his last 5 starts, so I feel relatively good about him being able to give you some production. And then for Yandrys Gómez, he posted up really good numbers at AAA Charlotte, and it's come up, and last few starts have not been great for him, to say the least, as he has given up a grand total of 9 runs, 7 of which have been earned across his last 3 starts. That is a total of 13 and 2/3 innings, so it's been a little bit up and down. And the big thing is he's given up 9 walks in his last 8 and 2/3 innings across his last 2 starts, so that's an issue. And overall for the season across 3 different teams, 1.2 home runs, 5.9 walks allowed per 9 innings, 5.20 ERA, 5.30 fielding independent, backed up by a White Sox bullpen that they were showing a little bit of promise, and well, since they showed that promise, they went straight down the toilet bowl. You've got a really nice long guy, Mike Fasilo, has been able to give you a sub-275 ERA, but now they've had to put Elvis Piguero, Dan Altavilla on the injured list, Grant Taylor, Brandon Iser, Jordan Leisure. You've got a lot of guys that are rocking an ERA that is above a 3.75, so that's a little bit of an issue. And for the White Sox, this team has actually been in the upper half of the big leagues in terms of run production ever since the All-Star break. Mike Tauchman is able to give you a 3.65 on base. The catcher spot with Edgar Quintero, along with Kyle Teal, both of these guys hitting above a 2.70 has been solid. And then you've got essentially a quartet of guys who have been able to give you some good production with 13 to 16 home runs, as you've had that out of Colson Montgomery, Luis Robert, Miguel Vargas, and Andrew Benintendi. All these guys are hitting a 2.34 or lower, though, and the only guy with above a 300 on base, Miguel Vargas, is out on the injury list. Lenin Sosa has been leading the way with 18 home runs, about a 2.65 average, but he only gives you about a 2.95 on base. These guys are really not walking a lot. They've had a lot of busts of veteran guys, like they had a DFA Josh Rojas. Michael A. Taylor is hitting a 2.04, so You've got your issues there. And for the Minnesota Twins, it's a very much gutted lineup that still have guys that are able to hit the deep ball. Like, you've been able to get 20 home runs a season out of Matt Wallner, but he's only hitting about a 215. You've been able to have Cody Clemens give you 14 home runs with less than 270 at-bats, but he's hitting a 211. Trevor Larnach, Brooks Lee, between 14 and 16 home runs apiece, sitting in the neighborhood of a 244 to a 252, but I mean, Lee's on-base percentage is 293. Byron Buxton's been great. 20 stolen bases, 29 bombs, 335 on-base. He'll take that, and Ryan Jeffers is up to a 350 on-base as well, but Royce Lewis has just had a disastrous season full of injuries, and this is a Twins bullpen that, you want to talk about disasters, they trade away all their good pieces like Danny Kalum, Louis Varlin, Yoan Duran. So now you're looking at the likes of Cole Sands, Justin Topa, Cody Funderburk, a whole bunch of guys are posting up a sub-375 ERA, actually north of a 375 ERA, so interesting spot here. I did somebody tell that at 8.8, I like the over, but at a +120 or better, we'll take a shot on that Twins run line. 919 and 920 on the card, it is the Astros playing us to the New York Yankees. Will Warren is on the bump for the Yankees, and Jason Alexander, no relation to George Costanza, is on the bump for the Astros. Astros are an underdog between +104 to a +112, -119 to a -126. That number on the Yankees sign is a total unders -120, and the over is even. And if you're willing to lay a run half with the New York Yankees, that initial FanDuel opener is just a +120 on the run line. And I would need at least a +121 to be able to take a shot here on the Houston Astros. Right now, I'm seeing that -120 out there on the Yankees. That's my max lay with them. I set them at a -121, but I would be willing to go to a -120. For Will Warren, maybe I'm just a moron here, but I actually think that he has some upside. That said, when he's going to show that upside, nobody knows, because he's got a 4.30 ERA, a 3.88 fielding independent. The 10 strikeouts per 9 innings are nice, but again, 4 walks per 9. He really doesn't allow too much of the deep ball. 1.1 home runs allowed per 9 innings, but I mean, he's given up across his last 3 starts a grand total of 12 runs, albeit most of these have been unearned. As a matter of fact, I believe 600 runs in his last 3 starts. The Yankees have had some fielding blunders recently, but that said, that's a little bit concerning. And then on the flip side for Jason Alexander, he's been surprisingly good thus far for the Astros. As with the A's, he had a small sample size of 3 appearances where he had an 18 ERA. If you toss that out, and if you look only at the Astros numbers, 296 ERA, 7.6 strikeouts, and 2.8 walks per 9 innings, he's due for regression, a 416 fielding independent, but, and he's been serviceable, not a guy that's going to blow you away, but you know what, he's getting the job done, and he is backed up by a bullpen that does rank at the top 10 in the big leagues in terms of ERA, even with Josh Hader being out of the fold. You've got the Bryans, Brian King, Brian Abreu, Bennett Sosa's on the injury list now as well, but you've been able to have Steven Oker be able to give you some good innings as well. And for the Astros, they are getting healthier with Yordan Alvarez now back in the lineup. Hasn't done a ton this year because it's a small sample size, but we all know his work. Jose Altuve, 24 bombs with a 275 average. Christian Walker's now giving you 300 on base. He's up to 21 home runs. They're still without Isak Paredes. They might get him back towards back half of the season, but you've got Jeremy Pena continue to give you over a 300 average with 20 stolen bases as well. And Yennier Diaz, he still needs to do a better job with his 284 on base, but hitting a 253 with 18 home runs, so solid middle of the lineup. And then on the flip side, obviously, this is a New York Yankees team that is able to trot out there a very powerful lineup. On any given night, you might have 8 out of the 9 guys in the starting lineup with at least 17 home runs, with Giancarlo Stanton only having 17 home runs because he's only played in 55 games. He's getting a home run every 10 or so at-bats, 375 on base. Now, Austin Wells, Anthony Volpe, 19 home runs apiece, but both are hitting at 210 with a sub-275 on base. That shows the all-or-nothing nature of this team, but Ben Rice has been picking it up recently. Jazz Chisholm, Trent Grisham, Cody Bellinger, all between 26 to 28 home runs, all with at least a 333 on base. And then obviously Aaron Judge, 43 home runs, 445 on base. He should win AL MVP. And for the Yankees, bullpen has been much better recently. Camilo Duval has had his issues with the New York Yankees, but David Benar has been a nice addition. He, Fernando Cruz, Tim Hill are all give you a sub-3. You're right, Luke Weaver is looking much better after he struggled a little bit coming off of injury. Yuri De Los Santos has been giving you a little bit of a tough time recently, but in the end, I do think that the Yankees do a solid job of getting into Jason Alexander. I think that Will Warren holds down an Astros team that's been in the bottom 6 in terms of run production since the All-Star break. So, somebody tell it at 8.7. I'm in on the 9-under and the Yankees up to a -120 on the money line. 921, 922 on the card. The Mets are on the road against the Detroit Tigers. Casey Mize goes for the Tigres, and you've got Clay Holmes on the bump for the Mets. Mets are a slim favorite between -108 to a -115. -105 to even money is that number on Detroit. 8.5 is the total. Over and under, both at -110, and I did set the Tigers at a minus 127. I'm going to be willing to roll with that money line. As for Casey Mize, he's done a relatively solid job of not beating himself. For Casey Mize, he's not going to go out there and give you a whole bunch of swing and miss. He's up to about 8 strikeouts per 9 innings, but he's only given up 2.4 walks per 9 innings. Starting to give up a little bit more of the deep ball, 3.95 ERA compared to a 4.06 fielding dependent, and that's been the saving grace for Clay Holmes. He's got a 3.6 ERA, but a 4.08 fielding dependent because he only gets 7 strikeouts and 3.5 walks per 9 innings, but just 0.8 home runs allowed per 9 innings. And that ERA goes down to about a 3.32 when he's away from home, so he's been relatively rock solid there. But you do have to now face off against a Detroit Tigers team that's averaging 5.1 runs per game at home. That is a top six mark in all of baseball. Certainly didn't show as much fight yesterday as the Mets were able to really get busted out. As for the Mets, it's been a little bit of a top-heavy lineup throughout the season, but Jeff McNeil, Mark Vientos, Brett Beatty, now all hitting above a 240, all give you at least 13 home runs. They have been rock solid, and then Pete Alonso's up to 32 bombs, 345 on base. Juan Soto, over 30 home runs with a 4-runner on base. That's been great. Brandon Nimmo has slowed down with power, but he and Francisco Lindor both had 20-plus bombs, both hitting about a 265. So, I mean, it is a lineup that really, other than the catcher spot with Lewis Torrens and Cedric Mullins, has been a little bit testy as well, has been pretty solid. But for the Detroit Tigers, on any given night, you could have all but one of the guys in that starting lineup hitting above a 255. And sometimes you'll have out there Trey Sweeney for a second guy, but Spencer Torkelson is typically that main guy, 330 on base. So, and he's been able to supply this team with 28 plus home runs. Riley Green is up to 32 home runs. He's hitting about a 270. And then just a lot of guys between like 11 to 14 home runs. Gleyber Torres, Cole Keith, Zach McKinstry, Wenceslao Perez, and they're all hitting at least a 255. And then Kerry Carpenter, well above 20 home runs. The big issue that you've got for this Detroit Tigers team has been the bullpen. Since the beginning of the month of June, they have been in the bottom seven of the big leagues in terms of bullpen ERA. Tommy Canley has just been a mess. Over a 4 ERA. Tyler Holton has had his ups and downs as well. He's posting up about a 384 ERA. Rafael Montero, more like Rafael Montero Bull. But Kyle Finnegan, Will Vest, Brendan Hanafee have been able to give you some 335 ERA. And for the Mets, Ryan Helsley has been terrible. Like, man, this guy has not been able to find it with the Mets, to say the least. But Tyler Rogers has been pretty solid. He and Gregory Soto are both posting up sub 3 ERAs in a Mets uniform, though Soto will poop the bed sooner rather than later. Brooks Raley has been solid. Edwin Diaz has been able to give you some good production as well. But in the end, I do think that Clay Holmes experiences a little bit of regression. I think that the Tigers and Mize get to him here, so I tell it an 8.7, like the over, and for the Tigers, willing to lay up to a minus 126 on that money line. 923, 924 on the card. The Rangers are on the road against the Arizona Diamondbacks as Zach Allen looks to fill it up for Arizona, and Jack Leiter is on the bump for Texas. Texas is back to being an underdog between plus 112 to a plus 122, minus 130 to a minus 137, that number on Arizona with a total of 9, the under is minus 110 to a minus 120, over is between even a minus 110, and for the Diamondbacks, I did set them on the money line at a minus 123. Right now, we're seeing about minus 130, minus 135. And if we could get that plus 122 up like a penny or two, and I think that when it's all said and done, I should be able to get a plus 125 on the Rangers just because of the brand name of Zach Allen. I will be in on the Texas Rangers money line. And if you are looking at that initial opener that I'm seeing with regards to the run line, you're not going to be getting the world's greatest number on the Arizona Diamondbacks at a plus 140. I would have needed at least a plus 159. So in some form or capacity, I will be backing the Rangers in this spot. And for Jack Leiter, I am a little bit concerned about the walk issues that he's had this season. 3.77 ERA with a fielding dependent that is right in that neighborhood of 4.24. 8.7 strikeouts and one home run allowed per nine innings is solid, but the 4.4 walks per nine, that's a little bit of a concern, but comes in really good form. How about 7 earned runs allowed across his last 5 starts, albeit 2 of those starts he went fewer than 4 innings, but overall he's been able to do a nice job holding down the fort. And for Zach Allen, it's just been a disastrous season for him. Much better recently though. 8 earned runs allowed across his last 5 starts, and he has went 6 plus innings in 4 of those last 5 starts, so he's looking like the Zach Allen that we all know and love. Way too little, way too late though. 4.94 ERA, 4.49 field independent. His strikeout stuff is down, 8.3 strikeouts per 9 innings, and the 1.4 home runs per 9 innings have been a little bit rough. He does go up against a Rangers team that is very much banged up right now. As right now, you've got Corey Seager dealing with injuries. He hit the injured list. You've got Marcus Semien, who's currently out of the fold. So that's been an issue. Though Kyle Higashioka, since the beginning of the month of July, hitting above 300 for this Rangers team. They're averaging about 5.2 runs per game since the beginning of the month of July. That is a top 4 mark in all of baseball. Roddy Tellez has been able to north of a 260 ever since he joined the Texas Rangers. He's got 15 home runs on 250 at bats this far this season. Wyatt Langford is up to 21 bombs. He's been able to give you about a 335 on base. Josh Smith has moved a line for the team. Now, got guys at the bottom like Jonah Heim, the outfielder, and Hellman, Alejandro Ozuna, that are just giving you nothing, and I think that that's going to manifest itself. And for the Arizona Diamondbacks, this is a little bit of a gutted lineup as well. Recognize that Tyler Locklear a few days ago had a home run, but he and Ore Barroza are hitting below the Bedoya sign of 200. I do like the fact that they call up Jordan Moore and Lawler. Lawler started off 0-30 this year, so that's not great, but I remember him in college baseball being solid. He's going to pick it up sooner rather than later, but question is when? As Geraldo Perdomo's give you 380 on base, he's been rock solid. Ketel Marte, 380 plus on base, has slowed down with home run power, hit a home run a few days ago, but 24 bombs for the season. Corbin Carroll, 29 home runs, but both of these teams are now very top-heavy with regards to their lineups, and the Texas Rangers have by far the better bullpen. As for the Texas Rangers, you've got a lot of guys who've been able to give you a sub-325 ERA. A lot of guys are just holding down the fort, as Robert Garcia has been having his issues a little bit recently. He's up to more like a 333 ERA, but Sean Armstrong, Cole Wynn, Obie Miller, these guys have been rock solid in that bullpen, and now they're getting Chris Martin off the injury list. And for the Arizona Diamondbacks, Andrew Selfrank has been good in this bullpen, give you a sub-225 ERA, but then you got the guys like Bryce Jarvis, the long guy, Jalen Beeks, John Curtis with two S's, Kyle Bacchus, Juan Murillo, all posting up over a 355 ERA. So with Rangers at a +124 or better, I'm going to be looking at them on the money line, and did somebody tell a 9.1, so being able to get the 9, I'm going to be in on the over as well. 925, 926 on the card. The Baltimore Orioles are on the road against the San Diego Padres. Nestor Cortes is on the bump for the Padres. Cade Povich goes for Baltimore. Baltimore is a underdog between +135 to a +150, -160 to -170 is that number on the Padres. 8.5 is the total. Over is -115. The under is -105. And set the Padres money line at a -169. If you're looking to lay a run half with them, you're going to be getting that right in the neighborhood of about a +130 or so. And I'd be willing to take a +120 or better, semi run line price at a +117. I just do not trust Cade Povich right now. And for Cade Povich, he's actually been a little bit better when he has been on the road rather than at home. And the swing and miss stuff has actually been pretty solid for Cade Povich. But still, even though he's getting 9.9 strikeouts per 9 innings, 1.5 home runs, 3.2 walks allowed per 9 innings, a nice whopping 5.02 ERA, and he's given up 3 plus runs and now 3 out of his last 5 starts. Again, 5 plus strikeouts in each out of his last 5 starts. But man, he's given up way too much hard contact there. And for Nestor Cortes, it's been up, down all around for him as he's given up. He combined 7 runs in his last 3 starts, but his last start he gave up 3 runs in 3 innings. A few starts ago at home against the Giants, gave up a 4 spot, all came in the first inning. You just never know what you're going to get out of Nestor Cortes. Overall, since he joined the Padres, I'm going to throw out the 2 starts that he had with the Brewers. In his 5 starts with the Padres, 375 ERA, but a 521 field independent with 1.5 home runs, 3.8 walks per 9 innings, and just not getting a lot of deception, 7.1 strikeouts per 9 innings, but he does get to go up against a Baltimore Orioles team that has really not been able to hit away from home all season long. They're averaging 3.9 runs per game away from home. That is a bottom three mark in the American League, and they've been dealing with a lot of injuries. Samuel Basalo is a young catcher that they have a lot of promise for, but has not necessarily shown a lot of might at the big league level just yet. Jackson Allday, Gunnar Henderson, both of these guys have been able to give you some good power, 15 to 16 home runs apiece, and Henderson up to about a 350 on base. He's hitting a 280. You've been able to get a little bit of production as well. Jeremiah Jackson hitting well above a 300. He is not hit for a lot of power, but he's moving the line. But for Basalo, I mentioned before, along Kobe May, Colton Cowser, when he's been out there, Tyler O'Neill has dealt with injuries all season long. I'm pretty sure he's back on the injured list. I mean, all these guys have been hitting a 220 or lower, but Dylan Beavers, he's been out there in the outfield hitting above a 300, so that's been solid. And with San Diego Padres, bottom 14 in the big leagues in terms of home runs out of per at bay basis. Now, they actually made a trade with the Orioles. Ryan O'Hearn has added for a lot of power, but he still gives you about a 350 plus on base. Ramon Laureano is actually now their best home run hitter, 22 home runs hitting above a 290. You've had Manny Machado, Gavin Sheets, Fernando Tatis Jr., all between 18 to 21 home runs for Tatis and Sheets, both hitting about a 265 for Machado, about a 350 on base with 21 bombs. The Luis Rise, you expect a little bit more than a 285 average, but the Padres just absolutely dominate the Orioles with regards to the bullpen, as Yarmil Hidalgo, Grant Wolfram, Yunir Cano, Corbin Martin, so many guys in that Orioles bullpen posting up an ERA above a 4, and without having your main guy, Felix Bautista, out there, it has been a big giant struggle for them. And then for the San Diego Padres, this is a bullpen that's just locked, loaded, and ready for bear. So many guys, they're able to give you a sub-335 ERA. Jeremiah Estrada has been a little bit testy recently, but Adrian Morejon, Wandy Peralta, Mason Miller, Robert Suarez, all these guys going out there getting the job done. David Morgan has had a few issues over the last few days, but all in all, has been pretty rock solid as well. So I do think that the Padres are going to be able to take it to the Orioles here, +118 or better, looking at that Padres run line. And it's semi-total at 8.2 with the way that the Orioles are not hitting on the road, so also in on the under. 927, 928 on the card. The Blue Jays are on the road against the Cincinnati Reds. And yes, we're on to Cincinnati, who's on to one Zach Little, hoping to come up big for them. Shane Bieber goes for Toronto. Toronto is a sizable favorite, anywhere between -145 to a -157, +128 to a +140. That number on Cincinnati, 8.5 is a total, over and under both at -110. And I said the Blue Jays are just a -112 favorite. I'm going to be willing to back the Reds on the money line. Now, the Reds had to utilize a bullpen game, but unbeknownst to the Blue Jays, they did as well, because Jose Berríos only went 2 innings yesterday. yesterday. So both of these teams are very, very affected by that. Both of these teams are going to be very tired in the bullpen. Shane Bieber and his 2-start sample size, pretty solid. He has gotten 12 strikeouts per 9 innings, 11 and a third innings. He's given up 3 runs, and this does go back to his minor league numbers as well. At the minor league level, he was done right. He had like 7 minor league rehab appearances between the Blue Jays and the Cleveland Guardians, was posting up good numbers there, so he's all good to go here. But for Zach Littell, he has been able to do a better job of keeping the ball in the yard in Cincinnati. He was given up 1.8 home runs per 9 innings with the Tampa Bay Rays, closer to about 1.3 here with the Reds, and overall for the season, 3.63 ERA compared to a 3.88 fielding independent. It's been a little bit up and down for Littell. 4-plus runs given up in 3 out of his last 4 starts, but 2 of those starts were due to unearned runs, so he was hurt a little bit there. And for the Reds, all of a sudden, this is a lineup that is very much coming alive. Elly De La Cruz has been your main masher, as he's been able to spy this team with 19 home runs, and obviously the stolen bases, the over 340 on base has been rock solid. But now you've got Nevaly Marte doing a great job finding a way on, hitting a 290. He's been able to spy this team with a double-figure amount of homers. TJ Friedel is up to about a 370 on base. Gavin Lux has been able to give you a 360 on base. So, I mean, top to bottom, this team has been very rock solid with their lineup. Ke'Bryan Hayes has been a better pickup than I was thinking, as in a Cincinnati Reds uniform, he's been able to give you about a 345 on base as well. And then on the other end, the Blue Jays have been a top 10 offense in terms of run production, and they really put it on the bullpen game of the Reds yesterday. Obviously, you've got Flagler Jr. doing amazing things with about 21 home runs, 386 on base. George Springer now up to 26 bombs after hitting multiple yesterday, over a 390 on base. You've got Bo Bichette, who's been able to give you 18 bombs. He's been able to hit above a 300. And then don't call his name. Alejandro Kirk has been able to hit a 300. Even the bottom of the lineup, they now pick up Isaiah Kinnear-Falefa to be able to help out. Davis Schneider has been able to do a nice job of giving you about a 360 on base. But for the Blue Jays, if you look since July 1st, this has been a bottom five team in terms of bullpen ERA. You've had a lot of guys be shaky for this team. Even Brandon Little, one of their better relievers, he's now up above a 3 ERA. Braden Fisher, Yuriel Rodriguez are both in that neighbor about a 3 ERA as well. Tommy Nance has probably been your best reliever recently for this team, as obviously the struggles of Jeff Hoffman have been very real. And for the Reds, when it comes to your main closer in Emilio Pagan, you always have the threat of him giving up a home run, but he's still been able to give you a sub 350 ERA. Graham Ashcraft has been a little bit up and down as a long guy, and this is very much a spent bullpen with having to throw out there Scott Barlow as a starter yesterday, so that was not necessarily so great to say the least. But Lewis May has been able to give you about a 345 ERA, and I do think that with two very tired bullpens that you're going to get a lot of scoring in this game. So my total 9.2, like the over. And for the Reds plus 113 or better, I'm in on the money line, and we wrap things up with 929, 930 on the card. It is the Cardinals playing us to the Athletics, as Jeffrey Springs is on the bump for the Athletics, and Matthew Liberatore is on the bump for the Cardinals. Cardinals are in a relatively pick-em game, both of these teams, and between a minus 102 to a minus 110 with a total of 8.5, over is minus 115, under is minus 105. And for the Cardinals, I did set them on the money line at a minus 123. I'm going to be one to lay it. Maybe I'm just a schmuck for this, but I do think that Matthew Liberatore is doing for some positivity. He's been posting up a 4.32 ERA, but a fielding companion more around a 4.03. 1.1 home runs, 2.3 walks per 9 innings. His main issue has been a lack of deception, as he's only been able to get about 7 strikeouts per 9 innings, and he has been really allowing the runs recently. This has been a bad stretch for him, as he has given up at least 3 runs in each out of his last 5 starts, but a lot of those runs have been unearned runs as well. It's just been a Cardinals team that in general has been miring mediocrity over the last few weeks. But myself, Wilson Contreras, who I thought was going to be suspended due to that tirade, but you know what? He's still out there, and he's still been able to give the team like a 335 on base. He's supplying 19 plus home runs, so that's been great. Ivan Herrera's been able to move the line with about a 370 on base. He's been able to give about 12 home runs despite being banged up for about half the season. Mason Wynn is getting on with about a 255, and Lars Nupar hitting much better recently. He's been a little bit of time on the injury list. You take a look at him ever since coming off the injury list, he's been hitting about a 300, so that's been pretty good for this team. But you still do have the young guys who are just not stepping up for this team. You currently injured Victor Scott, Nick Church, you've got a young catcher out there in Jimmy Crooks, who got a start yesterday, Jordan Walker, all these guys hitting a 235 or lower along Nolan Gorman. And on the flip side for the Athletics, very top heavy lineup, as you've got a quartet of guys with at least 23 home runs apiece, all hitting at least a 265 for the team. Tyler Soderstrom, Brent Rooker, Shea Langeliers, a.k.a. Shea Bangs, and Nick Kurtz. Kurtz has been able to give you a 400 on base. Langeliers more around about a 263 average, but still has been able to provide a lot of power. But Lawrence Butler, even though he's been able to hit for home runs this year, just a 305 on base. Zach Aloff in a small sample size. He and J.J. Bleday have just not given you a lot. Zodarell Hernias, what they've been batting at the bottom of the lineup, has been able to give you 320 on base. The big issue that you have with the Athletics is that this is a bottom five team in terms of bullpen ERA, as you've got a lot of guys that just have not been able to go out there, get the job done. They pick up Scott McGough from the Arizona Diamondbacks. He, Tyler Ferguson, Justin Sterner, a lot of guys, they're posting up an ERA above a 3.60. Hogan Harris has not been Hogan hero this year, as Sean Newcomb along with Michael Kelly have been able to give you a sub 3.50 ERA, and Elvis Alvarado more around about a 3.70 ERA. But for the St. Louis Cardinals, even though they trade away Ryan Elsley, it has not been a bad thing, as Ryan Elsley has been absolutely terrible with the Mets. They do now have Riley O'Brien deal with a little bit of injury, but he, Matt Savanson, Jojo Romero, Kyle Leahy, these guys have been able to give you a sub 3.50 ERA. So do think that in the end, the Cardinals are able to get the job done against a guy in Jeffrey Springs who has been seeing a big giant dip with regards to his swing and miss stuff. For Jeffrey Springs, he has been better when he's been away from home rather than at home. We've been seeing that with a lot of these Sacramento pitchers, as he has given up 3+ runs in now 3 of his last 4 starts. For Springs, 4.17 ERA, 4.77 fielding dependent, only 7.3 strikeouts per 9 innings, giving up 1.5 home runs and 2.9 walks per 9 innings, but again, has been a little bit more effective when he has gotten away from Sacramento, as he's got a 3.66 road ERA, and on the road, he's given up closer to 1.3 home runs per 9 innings, closer to about 1.7 bombs per 9 innings at home with a 4.73 ERA. So I'm going to be looking at the Cardinals on the money line, set them at a minus 123, and like the under sub, I told it at 8.3, and that'll wrap things up for the Wednesday edition of the Baseball Betting Show, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Big thanks to Curtis Rogers, who does such amazing work over at 710 Seattle Sports. He joined me in the last segment. If you do like hearing from this fine podcast, Baseball Betting Show, you're able to subscribe wherever your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you, for this podcast, you have one of two ways to be able to fire those in. First one is my Twitter/X timeline at GUnit_81. Keep in mind, letters CM, they mean does not matter, so as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. And the other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. And then from there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. I'm with you guys every single day throughout the baseball season, regular season, and postseason. So I'll be back with you once again tomorrow. Thank you.